And if you're still looking for a gift for someone on your list who loves to read, Petra Mayer of NPR Books is going to help you out. Petra, good to talk to you again.
I'm always happy to come nerd out about books with you guys.
We're happy to have you nerding out with us, and we're going to talk about some of the books you have on your list. But I've been sitting here feeling bad for you, thinking that no one must ever give you books. You're like the person who has it all, right? Like, what do you get for the book editor in your life?
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Although I did used to get a lot of books as a kid.
Really? And what do you remember from those days?
So, yeah, my parents, it was a big deal in my family. They would give me a beautiful hardback book every year for Christmas with a little inscription in it. My favorite was called, like, the Smithsonian Book of Newspaper Comics, and it was this giant coffee table-sized compilation of vintage newspaper comic strips, and I still love, you know, Crazy Cat and the Katzenjammer Kids and all those old vintage comics that I learned about from this book my parents gave me for Christmas.
I'm glad you said that, because I have a 10-year-old in my life who I want to share my own love of reading with, but I don't really know where to start. I have a feeling that my interest when I was 10 years old may not necessarily align with hers. How do you recommend giving books to kids?
I actually think you should go back to what interested you when you were 10. When I think about books I would give to kids, I think about what I loved when I was that age. You know, another book that my parents gave me, it was not a Christmas hardback, but it was one that stuck with me. It was a book by the children's and YA author Robin McKinley, and it was called Beauty. Robin McKinley is also known for The Hero and the Crown and The Blue Sword, which are two great YA adventure novels. But this one is a retelling of Beauty and the Beast that makes Beauty not a beauty and her sisters not evil. And it's lovely and thoughtful and deep and full of gorgeous imagery. And I would reread it constantly all throughout my childhood. And I would give that book to a kid in a second.
Well, let's talk about some of the books that would be for an older audience, starting with Circe by Madeline Miller. We spoke with the author on this program. It's a fascinating story about the sorcerer Circe of Greek mythology, but from her own perspective.
Yeah, so that book actually comes from one of my favorite literary subgenres, which I like to refer to as fan fiction for people who don't want to admit that they like fan fiction.
That exists?
Well, in my head, it does. And I read a lot of fan fiction, and I'm not shy about telling people that. So, no, but, you know, what fan fiction does is it's a way of interacting with stories. Good fan fiction says, here's this narrative. Let me pick somebody out of the background and tell their story. Or here's this narrative. I don't like how it ended. I'm going to rewrite it and see how it plays out. So with Circe, Madeline Miller takes the sorceress from the Odyssey, who we mostly know because she turned Odysseus's men into pigs.
Literally.
And, yeah, literally. You know, we're not just joking when we say men are pigs in this book. But she gives Circe a whole backstory. She kind of unfolds this story and you know, she's an unhappy childhood and you watch her grow from this kind of insecure, reactive, I don't know, can you call like a demigoddess a teenager? I guess she's a teenager. But she grows into this awareness of her powers and it's this beautiful story arc. I don't want to give too much away. I don't know how much you can spoil a story that's thousands of years old. But there's a lot of stuff in here that's just beautiful and very worth reading.
Sure. Also worth checking out, and this is making a lot of end of the year best book lists, Essie Adujohn's Washington Black. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so this is, just to give a quick plot recap, this is about a young enslaved boy on Barbados, and he has a new master, and the master is pretty evil. But the master has a brother who is scientifically minded and takes Wash, this young boy, George Washington Black, takes him on as kind of an assistant, and eventually they escape in a hot air balloon and travel the world together.
Really?
Yeah, and it sort of, you know, it starts out and you think it's kind of going to be this narrative of survival on a plantation, but it takes this just complete turn and becomes almost a road trip buddy story, which, you know, it's kind of hard to imagine in this context. And that's kind of one of the central questions of the novel is how friendly can a plantation owner's brother and an escaped slave actually be? And then Wash himself is such a great character. You know, he starts out as this young enslaved boy and he gets a scientific education and he becomes this grown up, brilliant Black man who is wondering where in the world there's a place for him. And he goes all over the world in the course of this book. And also, this is another one where the writing is so gorgeous. I mean, I read really fast, just naturally. I rip through things. And this book was hard for me because I had to keep stopping and being like, I'm going to just turn this sentence over in my head because it's so good. So, I mean, it's a brutal book in places, but you'll just keep reading because it's so beautiful.
That's two examples of fiction. How about nonfiction? There is this book called Chesapeake Requiem, A Year with the Waterman of Vanishing Tangier Island by Earl Swift, about a 200-year-old crabbing community in the Chesapeake Bay that is on the verge of extinction. Sounds fascinating.
It really is. Earl Swift, by the way, if I can just put in a plug for him, I've talked to him a couple times. He's a great reporter. And if I can recommend an older book, his previous book, Autobiography, is the life story of a 57 Chevy station wagon told through all the biographies of its owners. And it's a great gift for any car dork on your list.
Duly
but
noted.
This, yeah, Tangier Island is this really isolated little scrap of land in the Chesapeake Bay where there has been this sort of fishing and crabbing community for hundreds of years. And this island is washing away 8 acres a year. And it's only getting worse because climate change is causing the oceans to rise and the storms to get worse. And the people on this island are very conservative, very religious. They work incredibly hard. They understand that life is getting worse, but they don't believe in climate change, and they basically think God will save them. Earl Swift got real interested in this community, and he ended up moving there and living there for more than a year, and he would get up at, like, awful o'clock and go out in freezing, icy rain with these watermen to check the crab pots, and he'd watch the seasons change and the tourists come in the summer. And he really got to know these people and sort of figure out the history of the island and how it affects the current culture. And it's a really deep, nuanced portrait of a place that you could easily write off. But also, it really will hit you hard. These people are probably going to be some of America's first climate refugees. And this history and this way of life, it's going to go away. And so, you know, he doesn't give you an easy answer at the end of the book. Should we save Tangier Island? Is it worth it? He thinks so. But will it happen? There might not be the political will. And we will lose a lot when places like this go.
And it's worth pointing out that this is not the only place around the country that is experiencing this sort of thing. I've spent time reporting down in the Louisiana Bayou, and the exact same conversations are being had by fishermen there. So that sounds like a very relevant book. Speaking of relevant, you have a pick from Silicon Valley about the rise and fall of the tech startup Theranos.
Yeah, so you listeners out there in Radioland probably remember this story from earlier this year. Elizabeth Holmes, who had been the CEO of Theranos, got indicted for fraud. You know, the basic story is this company had promised that it had this revolutionary blood testing technology that could tell you all kinds of stuff from just a simple pinprick. And Holmes had gotten all these investors, super big names. The technology was rolled out to consumers and Walgreens. And then, of course, it turned out to all be a giant pile of lies. You know, the machine didn't work. It never had. And it all kind of fell apart. And so this book, John Carreyrou is the Wall Street Journal reporter who broke the story, and he turned his reporting into this book. You know, you think about how dry this could be, a story about, like, science, technology, fraud. It could get really dry, but the book is so propulsive. And what I also think is interesting is that Carreyrou went out and found, you know, the people that had gotten their blood tested at Walgreens and then freaked out because they got a bad result. You know, he really brings you the human impact of this big dramatic story.
Can I tell you about the best book I ever got at Christmas?
Yes, tell me. I want to hear.
Well, it was from my mother-in-law. Thank you, Annie. And it was by Ralph Steadman. It was a coffee table book. And it
I
was
love
called
Ralph Steadman.
Extinct Boids. And it was a collection of all of these paintings that he had done. Half of them were of actual extinct birds, and the other half were of birds that had just come up from his imagination. Ralph Steadman, of course, Hunter S. Thompson's friend, the artist who illustrated many of his books. I would have never thought about getting a coffee table book for Christmas, but I loved it. I wonder what you think of coffee table books.
I never put them on the coffee table because then people will put coffee on them and they'll get messed
get
up.
Those stains on them.
I mean, I love them. I love big, beautiful books. I have tons of them. Also, coffee table books are a service for your guests because you keep them around the house and then there's always something that somebody can entertain themselves with and also then be very impressed with your taste.
Yeah. Okay. So if people want more ideas, you've given us a lot of them, Petra, and they're great. Thank you. But where can people go to find even more ideas?
Ah, well, the NPR Books Concierge is there for all of your reading needs. It's up year-round, so, you know, it's great for gift ideas, and it's also there if you just need to find a book for your book club. There's more than 300 of our favorite books of the year recommended by our staff and our critics. And the cool thing about it is that it's all searchable by tags. There's this huge matrix of books, and then along the side of the screen, there's a list of tags. So you can say, book club ideas, nonfiction, rather short. Hmm. You can stack them and mess with them and play with them, and, you know, you can get really granular, actually.
Great. And we'll link to that at hereandnow.org. Petra Marin, editor at NPR Books, thanks so much, as always, for talking to us about your favorite books of the year.
My pleasure.